Welcome to another episode of Fratello on Air. I'm Mike Stockton, coming to you from London, England.
And I'm Balash Renzi, coming to you from Karlsruhe, Germany.
Well, sir, both of us...
Sicko.
Krank erkältet.
Yeah, Krankmeldung. Have you sent your Krankmeldung to your company?
No, even though I believe the founder of the company I work for is the one who gave me the cold.
Oh. So. You should not do tongues, you know, just like on the cheek.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the funny thing is, because some people told us that they liked the German insider jokes or informations, if when we're talking about Germans. I've said this before. I lived in a number of countries in my life, and I've, you know, been sick before. Germany is the first country. When I came here, I realized that people, they see the future because they message on a Monday and they say, oh, I'm sick. I'll be back Thursday afternoon. And I'm like, how do you know you'll be back Thursday afternoon?
That was always my question, Balash. How do you know?
Yeah.
How do you know?
They always tell you the deadline. Like, I'm sick today, but by Wednesday, I won't be sick anymore. Like, I'm sick since Sunday. But Mike, for the love of God, I cannot tell you. How long I'm going to be sick. I hope not too long because it's not fun, but I don't know.
I think what you're missing, Balash, is putting a time on it because you'd be better by that day.
Yeah.
You're missing the magic, man.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's like, what's it called? What's the when you think about something, and then it happens because you thought about it, or so they say.
Oh, yeah. I don't know the...
Instagram coaches have videos all over. You know what I mean. Anyways, yeah.
Well, I always thought that in Germany, it was incredible how, especially if you were on private insurance, it was very easy to get signed out. And I remember when I left my last job, I even... had friends, barely friends, who are doctors who said, oh, you're leaving your job? You want me to sign you out for the next 3 months? I thought, no, that's okay. I'd feel a little bit disingenuous there, but no problem doing it. And now, funny enough, I have a good friend who's Italian, and over there, apparently, it's quite strict. If you do that, there's quite a bit of governmental intervention, and doctors can get fined, lose their licenses. So I find it interesting how in mainland Europe, and you know this to be true, Italy gets picked on a lot for being a country that has a reputation of not being the hardest working country. And I couldn't find my experience is I find it the exact opposite. So
it's not only Italy. I think it's usually used for, of course, Italians, but also like, let's say, Southern European countries. But of course, it's because of the weather. It's the same I have one of my ex-bosses used to spend a lot of time in Montenegro, and he said the same thing. Like, it's not that they don't work hard. It's just they start later and then they take a bigger break, but then they work, you know, until 6, 7, 8. So he said, he said he had meetings at 9 in Montenegro, and people was like, it's not going to happen.
I think it's jealousy. I think that's what it is.
But Germans, as soon as it's 5 o'clock, the pen falls out of their hands and then they leave. Whereas I think in those places, and it also depends on the industry, right? Yeah. So he said at 9 o'clock, they were still having coffee, reading the newspaper, and they would come in like 10, 10:30, but they would stay like 6, 7. And then they from the workplace, they would still go to the bar and spend another few hours. That's just the mentality. But that's true. I have some Italian colleagues, and I love them to death. They are very they take their time, but when they have to stay, they stay. And it's not that they're not working hard enough. It's just a different rhythm.
I agree.
And I think there's a big difference if you ask Italians, and I'm sure there will be Italian comments in the article. If you ask it, as they also have this thing between North and South Italy, right? Like they the South Italians are lazy, the North Italians are hard workers, and the Southern say, no, it's the other way around. So I think it's just, I'm sure it's the same in Spain or, you know, all these countries.
Yeah, you've got it. Every region has its pecking order, right?
Or
rivalry. So.
Yeah, I'm sure it's the same in the U.S., right? Like people in the South, they're hard workers, and in the North, they're like soft and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I don't know.
So yeah, having a cold stinks, but better to get it done now than have it kick in the heart of summer, right?
Well, that's true. But the thing is, if you remember, this is the second time I have it this year, and it's really no fun. It's not as bad as it was the last time, because I think I lost my voice and stuff, and I had like a running nose for like a week. Now it's a bit better, but it's just no fun. And it goes to show that my immune system needs some tooting, to say the least, even with all the run that I'm doing and all the other stuff.
I need to drink more alcohol-free wheat beer.
Yeah, I need to drink more alcohol-free anything, actually. Maybe that's also the reason. I went for my run. And at least you got the cold, I guess, more fun, doing more fun than I mean.
No, it wasn't fun. Vegas was all work, all work. I could have been in Ohio, honestly.
Yeah,
okay, sorry, Ohio people.
Ohio's a nice place. I like
to leave. No, I'm kidding.
Cleveland's a great city. I talked about this.
The three C's in Ohio are great.
Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Columbus.
Yeah, and I even have time for Dayton, just historically speaking. But yeah, when you're at a conference, Balazs, and you know this to be true, it doesn't matter where you are if you're in a big conference room.
So. Yeah, it's like airport. Taxi, hotel, venue, hotel.
Have you ever been to Atlanta? Yeah, I've been to the airport. No, you've not been to Atlanta.
Yeah. So, in this case, I've been to Chicago. I've been to Denver.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been to Atlanta and a few other places. Yeah.
Hudson News looks the same everywhere, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not much fun. People think it is. Well, anyways, I thought I have fun with the run. We did this 9-kilometer run.
Yeah, you did well.
Sunday. Thank you. Well, I was the slowest in my group, as in the company, but not the slowest, one of the slowest. But those guys are nuts. Like, it's 8.9 kilometers, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like, what, 5 miles or something?
Yep.
And they are doing it under like 45 minutes, 38 minutes, 35 minutes.
Wow, like, that's nuts. Fast.
Really, really fast. So I did my fastest for that distance. It was around 6 minutes. Another thing that I really love, and I don't know if it's a German thing or not, so I'm not going to pin it on the Germans. You know, of course, when you do these runs, you have to leave through the gate of the start, because there's a chip, or there's like a gate measuring there's a chip inside your thing, sure. your number.
An RFID, yeah.
Right. And then as you finish the race, obviously, you have to go through the gate again, which is the finish line. So what do people do? They run through the gate and immediately stop. So while I'm running my last 200 meters and I look at the finish line, I have to slow down, because I see that what you'd normally do is whatever is in the tank, just, you know, pedal to the metal for the last 200-300 meters. No, in this case, you have to pull back, because those damn idiots are standing, because everybody's tired. Of course, I'm tired, and nobody's telling them, please keep moving on and, you know, because it's 6,000 people running, right?
I think I'd barrel through, buddy.
I was so pissed. I'm like, why is nobody there telling them to move the F on? So when I see an empty finish line, I can just run through it and maybe shave a couple of seconds off. Didn't happen. Mm. Yeah. Plus the weather was kind of, you know, gloomy, windy, bit of rain, bit of sun. Then I came home and I felt a bit under the weather. And then I woke up with a sore throat. I'm like, here we go again.
So were you wearing the carbon Richard Mille to run in?
No, I was wearing the thin one.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Because it fits under my my wristband, so I can sense. You know, I can wipe off my sweat. Mm-hmm. No, I was wearing my Ons, as I said last time, and they were really, really good, really, really good.
Nice. And you're not wearing you don't wear a watch while you run, do you?
No. So the thing is, I have, well, if I did, it probably only would be like a watch to track the time when I track the run, but I don't have one. And my buddy that I run with, he has an Apple Watch, and apparently his is more accurate than my phone, because his always shows like better distance and pace. And I don't know. So I'm really thinking about buying an Apple Watch, but I told many times before, the only reason I haven't bought one is because probably if I bought one, I wouldn't wear a normal watch. But I'm a bit annoyed because the phone, for whatever reason, my phone doesn't really measure it as accurately as the Apple Watch.
Well, I've I think I what's the newest Apple Watch? The more sturdy titanium one?
Oh, I don't know.
Ultra or some?
The sports one, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I like it. I think it's the best looking one that's come so far. The most tactical looking model, but I've decided, Balazs, even though we've talked about whether we got one or not, if it would just live on our wrists, mm-hmm. I'm bored by them. And you know what I'm really bored by with these Apple Watches? Seeing people pair truly hideous bracelets with them.
Oh, yeah.
Like bad Jubilee bracelets and stuff that looks like it'll leave your arm green. Bad. Really, really bad. It takes... Okay, you can like or dislike the Apple Watch design, but at least it's clean and styled.
Absolutely. I like the design.
Throw something tacky and crappy on there. Oof.
Yeah, it's a thing like, you know, if you like that look, just get a watch that looks like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you like the Jubilee bracelet, get a watch that is on a Jubilee bracelet. And if you, and because the Apple Watch is really not a watch, I mean, that's, you know, basically.
It tells
the time, but so does your phone, and your phone is not a watch either. I can duct tape my phone on my wrist. Is that a watch then? Yeah. Well, it's a device that tells the time that you wear on your wrist. I don't think it's a watch. But anyways, again, as I said, I like it. I think it's a good gadget, and it's good for stuff like that. I would wear it in a Velcro strap or something like that. You can just take off and wash. You can, you know, when I was going to Miami, 2 years ago, I think, I was talking to the immigration officer, and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm on business, went on a watch event." And he said, "Oh, you're into watches?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And you're writing for this and this and this. And he said, "Look, I love watches too." And then he showed me his Apple Watch, and he started like flick between the screen, like the backgrounds, and he had all kinds of like Richard Mille and Omega and Rolex. And I'm like, okay, cool. That's I guess, you know, it makes no sense to criticize the immigration officer before he puts the stamp.
Probably not.
But no, he was a great guy. And that was my first experience of many when the officer wasn't really just a poker face guy asking the questions, but he was really, really nice and very friendly.
You know, he's sizing you up during all of this conversation.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he does.
All behavioral.
No, I'm sure he does. But I mean, you know, once he asked me, I don't know which trip it was. And he said, he asked me something like, what was the last time you've been here or something like that? And I said, I can't remember exactly. Don't you have it in the system? And then he looked at me and he said, I have everything in my system. I said, there you go, and check it. I don't remember. But I've always been nice to those people. And not because they are, you know, deciding whether I enter or not, but why not? Like, you know, I'm tired. I'm sure they're tired. But I'm tired of, you know, having slept and sit on a chair for like 14 hours, and they're working for 14 hours or 10 hours. So
doesn't cost anything.
No.
To be nice.
And usually they're nice too. I mean, if they're like, you know, they have the poker face on, fine. I answer the questions. If nothing to hide, I'm not smuggling illegals in the country. I'm here for work, or I'm here for most of the time it's work. last time when I went to New York, I think the last trip I took, he asked me for no fingerprints, no nothing. He took my picture. He called me by my first name and he said, enjoy your stay. And I was out in like literally 45 seconds. Whereas others had to go through, maybe because I've been, you know, in and out so many times in the past few years, but I don't mind being nice. Why not? You know, it's fine. That's his job or her job. When I went to Detroit, I told you that the lady was also super nice. Asked me about my friend and where I'm staying. What does he do? Da, 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 da. So it's a good experience.
Cool. So
speaking of sneakers.
Yeah.
Well, we're not speaking of sneakers, but now I turned to sneakers now.
Yeah, I finally struck again. And I wasn't, I didn't have this plan, Balazs, but I saw them coming up and I shot you a picture
and yeah.
a couple other friends. And I thought, you know, that I'd like to collect or own a pair of the first, I don't know,
10.
5 or 6 or 7 pairs of Jordans. But I'm not going to buy just any. I'm going to wait for a colorway that I like or that I'd actually wear. And the other day, the Jordan 4s were released in what they're calling industrial blue, although there's some disambiguation or some ambiguousness, let's call it, ambiguity around whether it's industrial or military blue, because military was the colorway in 1989, and this is supposedly somewhat different.
Slightly is it darker?
Man, I have no clue. I think so. But these watches or these came out on Saturday and they arrived yesterday, which is pretty amazing considering Monday was a holiday. So the Nike warehouse must be pretty near me. And they also had on Saturday, I caught it too late, but they had a thing where you could go on the sneakers app and go pick them up at the London Nike Town. So that's kind of cool. Anyhow, these are pretty cool. And the Jordan 4s are not as bulky in person as they are in the pics. And I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen one of these in person, probably like 30 years. So yeah, I dig them. And this is the first pair, I think, other than the Homers, the Stan Smiths that you helped me get, that have sold out. Normally the stuff that I've bought, a couple pairs that I've bought when they're released are not the hottest things in the world. But when I bought these, it was one of those, okay, you're in the queue. And then it sent me the, you got them. So they were available, I think, briefly after that. And now they're no longer on the site. So they're clearly a popular color, which is not a slam dunk. Sorry for the pun these days. I've read a lot of articles about how the hype has died down, unless it's a really, really desirable release.
And I think that a lot of, influential people in the sneaker started to talk, or be more vocal about, reselling and against reselling shoes, that it's killing the hobby and things like that. I mean, us in the watch industry can relate to that, obviously. I like the forces. I have the Spizikes, the Spike Lee joints, which are kind of a mix between the fours and even the threes maybe and other stuff, but not the fours. I told you I still like the Craft Olive, just this dark green, black, and kind of white. Olive greens, but they are more, I guess, winter shoes or like, you know, fall, winter than summer. But these look actually pretty sick. I told you they're crispy with this mostly white and tiny bit of blue, and such a nice summer sneaker when it's a bit chilly outside, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to protect them because that's a lot of white and light gray, but I they'll be part of the rotation. And I'm with you on the whole flipping thing. I think when we see these vintage sneakers come up for sale and they're all cracked and everything, there's no purpose in, you know, storing these things away unless you're going to sell them in the next 5-6 years or something.
Yeah. And I think it's, probably materials now are better than they were 20, 30, 40 years ago. So who knows, in 40 years, they may not crack or fall apart. But if, as you said, when we look at these auctions like Jordan Game Worn, whatever, of course, you're not going to wear those shoes, but they're just falling apart. So having a $40,000 Jordan, which is, you know, they say it's 40,000, what are you going to do with it? You're going to sell to somebody else or eventually wear it. But if you wear it and it haven't been worn in the past 10 years, the glue will dry and it will die and you won't be able to wear it because the soles will fall apart or actually fall off unless they're stitched to the body of your shoe. So I just don't see the point.
Yeah. So yeah, kind of cool.
I'll check it out in a few weeks once I visit.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. Today is my wedding anniversary, so maybe I'll wear them
tonight. Oh, Mazel Tov. What are you going to do?
Baby.
What are you going to do?
Dinner.
Good.
Yeah, dinner tonight. And
some expensive bubble A?
You know, I don't know. Could be. We're going to a kind of a cool Italian joint in Soho, so.
Yeah, maybe not bubble A, but some nice wine then.
Yeah.
Nice Italian wine.
Maybe good stuff. Negroni, my buddy.
Ooh. Yeah, I should do that, but I'm taking medication, so.
Well, this is medication.
Well, I was thinking the same. I was like, should I take these pills or just have a Negroni? And both will give me the sweats, but
yeah,
one is better than the other.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get into more watch talk, we did want to mention a little bit of what's been on the boob tube. So what have you been watching lately?
Yeah, because I'm in
right home.
Yeah. Bedridden, kind of, or I was at least. Months ago or maybe last year, the Reacher thing was all over Amazon because I think it's an Amazon original.
Yeah.
It's the Jack Reacher, not the Tom Cruise Jack Reacher, right? But the Amazon Jack Reacher, which is a very different. Yeah, very big dude. 6'5", I think. So a huge guy. And I didn't know him before. And I thought, you know, he's like a wrestler or something. But apparently he wasn't. He was just an actor. Like a very, very big, tall, strong actor. And I watched season one yesterday. Binge watched it because I had, well, nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. In and out of sleep, you know, kind of. And it's really good. I have to say, it's... if you know the character Jack Reacher and you know the story, it is exactly like that. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I've watched, what are there, two series now?
Season one and season two, and I think season three is in the making.
Yeah, so we've watched both. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it's an entertaining show, and he's like traveling around. He's kind of like a hobo traveling around, retired, I think, military police he was.
Yeah.
Traveling around in the country, hitchhiking and taking Greyhound buses and sleeping in cheap motels, and he kind of arrives to a town and, like, you know, helps out the locals, and then this one season and next season he's doing something else. But so that was really cool. So I saw this all over, as I said, Amazon. I was like, you know, the banners and stuff, Reacher this, Reacher that, and I was like, okay, cool, maybe one day I'll watch it. And it was perfect for like gloomy Sunday, or when you're sick. Hopefully you won't be sick, so you don't have to spend your time being sick and watching it. But if you happen to have some time, I think it's a good show. And then my buddy told me that I should watch Yellowstone, because I think we talked about this as well, which I haven't started. But once I'm done with this, it's going to be Yellowstone.
Nice. Yeah, we started A Man in Full, which just came out on Netflix. And for those of you who don't know that, that is a Tom Wolfe book that... gosh, I think came out in the 90s, and I read it back then. And it's interesting. It's about an Atlanta-based real estate mogul who defends his empire, it says here, from those wanting to capitalize on his sudden bankruptcy and fall from grace. So you've got Jeff Daniels, Diane Lane, Tom Pelfrey, and a host of other actors like Lucy Liu, who you'd recognize. But so far, it's good. What's his name? Jeff Daniels plays a pretty kind of larger than life character, pretty obnoxious. And it reminds me of the book quite a bit. And there's a few stories going on in parallel that somehow come together, like most Tom Wolfe books. And so, yeah, we've liked that. And then we started watching Sugar on Apple TV, which has Colin Farrell in it, who I Sugar. Very much like. Yeah.
Okay. What is it about?
He is he's a private investigator who's investigating the death of a very, very wealthy Hollywood producer played by James Cromwell. And here again, a number of actors you'd recognize and, you know, your typical sordid Hollywood stuff going on in the background. It, in a way, almost reminds me of a modern version of L.A. Confidential.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Kind of, not really. But, and funny enough, James Cromwell is in L.A. Confidential. But he drives around a mid-60s Corvette, Colin Farrell. And he's a bit of a character in there, has some demons, of course, and no, it's a good watch. So, yeah, there seems to be a, you know, my wife was saying the other day how sometimes there's nothing on and sometimes there's a bit of a flood of new stuff. And we seem to be in that period where there's a bunch of new stuff coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll put it on my list. I started White Lotus and I have to say it absolutely did not interest me. I watched,
really?
Yeah, I watched one episode. And I was like, I really don't care about this. This show sucks. It's just, it was so boring.
I think you gotta keep going. It is
so langweilig.
I think you gotta keep going because it is I remember when it came out and I asked somebody what it was about and they struggled to explain it. And I would agree. But it's give it a whirl. Give it a few more.
Yeah, maybe I'll watch a second. But it's only 8 episodes or something. And the first one, that's first season, first episode, right? And I was like, this is nothing here.
I mean, if nothing else, Alexandra Daddario is in it. I like her a lot.
She's hot. Yeah.
Good looking and great.
And the prosthetic balls of Steve Zahn, that was a bit of a surprise, but... Well, I hope it's prosthetics. I hope it's not the real deal. I'm pretty sure it wasn't, but I was like, oh, okay. Well, maybe once I'm done with Reacher season 2, I'll try to give it another shot.
So let's move on to watches. So we're 27 minutes in, and maybe Balazs, in the beginning of this episode, you can put a little blurb about our main topic starting at this period. Although we did talk a little bit of watch content before with the Apple Watch.
I don't mind.
I hear you. So I wanted to kick off today about the Tag Heuer Kith. And it's a topic. So I was in Vegas. I was completely jet lagged, kind of out of it. I did not make an attempt to get on time because I was there for 72 hours. And Nacho shot me a note and said, hey, it's Monday. You know, here's the press release. We're not getting pictures till tomorrow. And then the article needs to come out on Wednesday. So, you know, felt like I had a lot of time to put my thoughts together, but time rolls on. And I wrote this article, which ended up being somewhat not challenging to write, but there were 10 different models released under this collaboration with, I guess, 7 being Kith only, 3 being, 2 being Heuer or Tag Heuer boutique only, and then 1 being a shared model. And so I had to kind of write that up. And admittedly, as cool as the press info was, it was like done in this like 80s grainy photography mode, like the original ads. And some of the detailing wasn't very good or felt like a Google Translate. So it was tough to read. So maybe some of my details weren't 100%. But in any case, I tried to cover the watches quite objectively. I gave my thoughts at the end. And I said, all right, they're expensive at 1,500 Swiss francs for any of the models that came out. Not cheap. And especially considering that the vintage, we didn't do a Hangelenx today, so we'll come back and do that after this. Mm-hmm. So so quite limited. I don't want to say an odd partnership. It wasn't because, okay, Hodinkee did this Talking Watches several weeks ago, which in retrospect now has gotten a ton of heat.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise about Ronnie Feig and his collection of F1 watches. And the fact that they decided to partner up with this burgeoning brand from the United States that a lot of people either don't know about outside of the US or in a certain age group, surprised many. And then I will admit to you, it did surprise me that watching the Formula One race in Miami this past weekend, that literally anywhere you saw the Tag Heuer name was replaced with Kith Heuer. I thought that was quite the move, really, to pretty much change your logo for an entire event and put that on parade for a series of watches that I think, I didn't do the numbers, but we're probably talking 2,500 pieces in total or 3,000 amongst all 10. And from what I can see, the Tag Heuer site tells me there's availability of the steel model on steel bracelet, but everything else is sold out, including the 18,000 Swiss franc sets of 10 in a special case and that good stuff. So unsurprisingly, with such a limited number, they've sold out. But the furiousness of the response was palpable. If you looked on our site, or if you read the comments on Hodinkee, it was incredible. Both the backlash against the site for doing the Talking Watches, but just around Tag Heuer's choice of partnering with this brand and the pricing and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. I need a glass of water because my throat is about to go into a coughing fit. So before I come back and tell you why I think the reaction was a bit of an overreaction by people, tell me what you think about these, because you are Mr. Kith. What do you think?
Yeah, I like the brand. I like Kith. Every time I'm in New York or in Miami or in Tokyo, which sounds a bit snobbish because I'm not in Tokyo a lot, but when I was in Tokyo, I went to the Kith store.
Like, and
when
Jay-Z,
I
was Jay-Z, man, from the shores of Thailand.
There you go. Exactly. So I've been to, when I'm in New York, I usually go to the boutique and buy something there. And sometimes I send you some photos of some watches, some shoes or whatever, I enjoy. Same in Miami. When I was in Miami, I went and bought a few things because they didn't have my size in New York. And a few years ago when I was in Tokyo, I went because I think the boutique had just opened and it's really, it's architecturally like super interesting to see. But same with the Miami store. Like it's a very cool vibe. There's like a restaurant upstairs and blah, blah, blah. So I like the brand. And when I was at Watches and Wonders, one day I was wearing a Kith shirt, which had Kith embroidered on the chest. And somebody asked me if I'm going to buy the watch because I think there's one image was already out, you know, of the dial with the logo. Now, I think just as a side note, you said the logo was changed for the Miami race. And by the way, is the Miami Formula One Grand Prix becoming the new Monaco, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, that's the word, right?
It is, huh? Yeah. It's like the who's
mega
who
in celebrity.
Everybody was there. I wasn't there, but everybody else was there. Yeah. So it's crazy. I think that the tag logo is just so known because of Formula One. And of course, the watch is called an F1 or Formula One. And it's so powerful that even if you put Mike and Balazs on it, people still recognize the Tag Heuer logo. So I think it was a great move for Kith, not so much for Tag, because Tag already, you know, people know Tag. Now, the people that are into Kith and Hype Beast or whatever, and I don't consider myself a Hype Beast, they obviously going to buy the watch. But I think this partnership was, as I said, was a bigger win for Kith than it was for Tag, in my opinion. Now, the watches are sold out. Of course, they are. They were limited. They were not, you know,
250 of some of these.
It's not like a moon swatch where you can. Yeah, it's not like a moon swatch. Price at 1.5. I mean, it's not cheap for a small kind of outdated looking quartz watch. Outdated because they look exactly like they looked in the 90s when they came out. 80s. Sorry, excuse me. Yes, late 80s. You're right. 86 or 87. Right. Now whether you like it or not, that's a subjective thing. Personally, I don't like it. I didn't like the originals. I never had the original. I don't like this one because it's the same look. I'm not a fan of this collaboration. I'm a fan of Kith. I like some of the Tag Heuers and Heuers. I have Heuers, vintage Heuers. This one just doesn't talk to me. This is nothing against the brand. This is nothing against Ronnie Feig or against Tag. The Hodinkee thing was obviously very well timed. I think it's it's not a coincidence that Ronnie brought up all these Tag watches and all those stories, and then poof, the collaboration comes out. Now, whether a media outlet should involve, because they did involve themselves in this campaign with this, is a good thing or not? Sure, I mean that's what brands do, right? They want the hype, they want the promotion, and with Hodinkee's involvement with LVMH, it's pretty obvious why this happened. I must admit, I don't watch too many of these Talking Watches episodes anymore because I'm just not interested in watch collections of people that I've never heard of. Or that could be just me being, you know, a dumb person who doesn't know these people. Could be. I watched this one because of Kith, because I like, I watched a lot of content with Ronnie Feig. He does, you know, complex sneaker podcasts and stuff like that. And he seems like a very nice, actually smart, humble guy. So he seems like a great guy. That video, was a bit over the top in my opinion as well. If you like the watch, as always, buy it, wear it. Do I like it? No. Did I buy it? No. But again, this is nothing against Tag Heuer or Kith. It's just not my thing. And next time I'm in New York or Miami, I'm going to go to the store again and probably going to buy something as well because I like the brand. That's where I am standing with this topic.
Very good. So I'll give my thought on this. Mm-hmm.
Which one did you buy?
I didn't. I went online and I looked, but I just couldn't find any compelling reason to do so. I'm not a huge fan of the, you know, the Just Us and the other stuff inscribed on the watches. Just doesn't really do anything for me, right? It doesn't signify anything for me. I don't own any Kith clothing. I don't mind it. I've been in.
Not yet. You don't.
I've been in with you, but that's just not my, it's not my current style, and it should be because I dig baggy clothing, but anyhow.
Yeah.
What I wanted to say is I think this was an overreaction by people because this was a really limited release. It was a pretty focused thing. And I think what you had was more of a backlash from people who probably are my age and above, who were just upset that, okay, that this is a watch that we remember and maybe remember dearly, and it was brought back as something very, very different from what it once was. And I totally appreciate that. I guess here's what I would say, and it definitely does lend itself to being a bigger win for Kith than it does Heuer, although it wouldn't surprise me if there are talks underway from LVMH to buy Kith or something like that. It would never surprise me. I went and scrolled through Ronnie Feig's Instagram, and I don't know where did he grow up? Strong Island or Staten Island or
no? I think he was
Queens.
I think he was Brooklyn, and then the scientist from Amelie Ondor was Queens, if I'm not mistaken, because that's his two brands, right? Kith and ALD are these two.
It's all the same.
Kind Anyhow. Of hip. Yeah, well, similar. Yeah.
I mean, New York area, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's a Brooklyn, like a very Jewish Brooklyn family. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I grew up in South Florida, all my friends, literally
Queens.
All of them.
Sorry, Mike. Queens.
Yeah. So Queens. Yeah. All of my friends were from that area. And, you know, somewhere Jersey, New York, that whole area. And I saw these pictures, I'm sitting out, you know, on a driveway or whatever it is, and in their baggy Hilfiger polo shirts, which I feel like people who are not from that era and people who aren't from America probably can't identify with that, but that was exactly how I grew up. And what's funny, Balazs, is Hilfiger was God back then. And after that, you had Nautica, and polo was like on a different level. It was just fancier and a bit more conservative. But
yeah,
you had your Hilfiger shirt, your baggy jeans or jean shorts, and
jorts.
Yeah, you're rocking the latest Nikes or basketball shoes or maybe a pair of Timberlands, and life was really, really good. You had your parents' hand-me-down car playing Dr. Dre on the CD player. Maybe you had a six-disc changer in the back with a bass tube. Mm-hmm. And of course, none of us were hard. we're all in the suburbs, but that was life back then. And watch-wise, most of us wore Swatches, and Fossil was a big deal back then.
Mm-hmm.
But the Tag Heuer F1, and as Americans, we had no clue what F1 was, by the way. No clue. Yeah, we were into baseball and comic books and shit like that. But that watch, for whatever reason, hit it big. It hit it really big because of the colors. And then the price point was certainly more than a Swatch, but it wasn't so expensive that it was completely out of reach, especially if you were, you know, in a, call it a middle-class family, maybe for, I don't know, graduation or
yeah, it was relatively affordable. Like yeah,
it was relatively.
And that was the success of that model line, right? That it was good quality Swiss-made quartz, which was normal at the time, but just for a relatively good price.
Yeah. So I 120% get it. If Ronnie Feig had the chance to do this, why not? And I think that, you know, I wrote in my article, which people just, I like it when people get so angry, they forget to take a step back and think about things a little bit longer. But I said two things. I said, first off, I said it would very much surprise me if Tag Heuer decided to bring this back for an edition of 3,000 watches and call it quits. It would seem like a very surprising move for such a big manufacturing brand like that depends on volume as much as anything. So I don't think it's the last we'll see of those watches, and perhaps we'll even see one in a larger case size. And maybe without the collaboration, the pricing will be a little bit a little bit lower than the 1500. The other thing I brought up is that you can get the vintage ones all day long for anywhere from $200 to $600, depending on condition, and they're fine. We didn't do our hand lengths, but I'll cheat here. And I'm wearing mine today. I've been wearing it a lot. I put a battery in it about 2 years ago, and it fired right up. And
which one do you have? The classic, the one with the, on the bracelet?
I do. So I have what is known as the WA1211, which Nacho wrote up a couple of years ago, and it's great. It's a small 35. I'll give it that. And the hooded lugs over that 18 mil bracelet don't make it look any bigger. It's got the glowing dial, which still glows. It's all tritium. It's a cool watch. It's very, very, very of the time.
Yeah.
But it was always well made. And aside from some bezel wear, and mine's still pretty good, it was always sturdy and nicely done. And I think it did a ton for Tag Heuer, because a lot of people years later, based upon their experience with the F1, wanted an Aqua Racer or something like that. So bottom line is, I'm not angry at it. I wouldn't have spent $1,500 on it, but I think it's cool. And it was a little passion project or a little project, and it's gone. And I think what's most important is to see how Tag follows this up now, and if they base something off of that watch in a more regular or series production that can appeal to more people and hopefully is a little bit more price sensitive.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, if they follow up, the thing is, as you said, it was a bit too much. I think it was a perfect watch for him, because a lot of the stuff that was on the watch, Just Us and this and that, it looks more
very
like
inside, right?
Yeah, yeah. More like a limitation to him and to his love for F1. And I think he tells the story. His mom was working at a jewelry store and she bought him the watch and blah, blah, blah. The problem I have with this watch, as well as other watches, and of course not only watches, is the hype. So then all these hype piece people will come, they buy it, and then they put it on the various sites. And now if you look at eBay or look at Chrono 24, whatever, it's 3,000 and up.
Yeah.
And that's dumb.
Yeah.
That's just dumb.
But let me ask you this though. If they had done this without doing the collaboration and done it for, it's not going to be below $1,000, because they just don't make any watches in that realm anymore. I know people are plastic, blah, 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 but come on, go look at the current F1. And I don't think I think it's 14 or 1600. I don't, whatever. So let's say it's maybe 1250 or 1300. The resin ones are a little less or something. And they had just released this. I think it would have gotten some play, but I think it would have largely been a niche, would have been niche appeal. And this has given them people will know this watch now if they come out with a regular version, because they will have seen it as a limited edition. I think it gave them the right kind of starting publicity to build off of. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And you know, why I said that it's a better partnership for Keith than for Tag Heuer is exactly like that, because there are more people that know the brand Tag Heuer than know Keith. And Keith's founded in 2011. Okay. So 13 years ago.
Yeah.
So from, you know, in 13 years, he went from there to here. And now everybody who knows the brand, they can look into Keith, and obviously it's a great partnership. I think it's good for both brands, but it's better for Keith than for Tag Heuer. Now Tag Heuer is not now, and all the LVMH brands are known for these kind of partnerships, right? Like Rimowa and Off-White and, you know, all these other things. So it's not the first one. Will it be the last one? We will see. One thing that we should mention, and I think we kind of talked about this, is that Keith in the store in, I'm not sure about New York, I can't remember, definitely Miami, they have other stuff, not only clothing by them, but vintage stuff they sell, including watches. And we both know the supplier of those watches, or some of those watches. I'm not sure if it's all of them, but some of them. And that's Eric Wind. Which he talks about every once in a while. And I think also on his website, he sometimes mentions that this watch is available at the store. And those watches are in a very, very different segment, right? We're talking about vintage Rolex, vintage AP, 10, 15, 20,000, 8,000, whatever thousand. And that was, so for me, that was the, when you went into the store, you saw the clothes, these are the clothes, and then that's the accessory to match. And this one is a maybe the accessory to match the other types. Because if you look at Kith as well, you have the usual t-shirts and stuff, and then they have the more expensive things, the shirts and, you know, and things like that. I guess those watches talk to that audience, and the guys who buy the baggy t-shirts and the shorts and whatnot and the hoodies, these watches talk to them. But again, it's a shame that I think many of these pieces were bought by flippers, basically, who want to make a quick buck, or yeah, actually, you know, a lot of money. Kind of like Moonswatch that was back then.
Yeah, and I don't know what the future of these will be. I think the appeal is going to be pretty limited, long run. I could be wrong. But I like them. I thought it was really cool over the weekend to see Verstappen and Perez wearing them, and all sorts of people wearing them again. It was, dare I say it, sentimental for me to see these watches on the wrists of people. And funny enough, they didn't look too small, although Formula One drivers are not big people, right?
Yeah.
So that's... They look big on TV, but they're not. And
so you think that the people, the naysayers, they couldn't get the vibe because they just didn't live it back then like you did?
I think that's part of it. I also think, okay, there was the pricing, which here again, I think, that was the other comment I was going to make. Forget the niche offering had they not done a collaboration. But the point I was going to make is if they're priced at, call it $1,250 or $1,300 without a collaboration, I think you're going to get just as much complaining as you would without the collaboration. People will still get upset that it's quartz. People will get upset that there are some resin versions. So you're not going to make those people happy. You just won't. And I would tell them, okay, go find a vintage one, but if you want to wear a 30-year-old piece of plastic on your wrist and assume that it's going to stand up to whatever you're going to throw at it, then be my guest. Go for it.
Listen, there's always going to be naysayers, but a watch brand's, I guess, focus is to sell watches. Did they sell the watches? They did. Did they make a hype around the brand? Absolutely. Did Kith make a hype around tech? Yes, and vice versa. So as I said before, it's a great collaboration. It put Kith on the map for a lot of people, I think. They sold the watches. I guess now they are, you know, they see the numbers coming in and they'll decide if they want to make another run or not. But that's the thing, right? Would it make sense for Ronnie Fike to do another run? Or it's a one and done thing, because it was Formula One. He did the F1 watches. What's next going to be? Carreras? Oh, yeah, I remember a neighbor's boyfriend's, girlfriend's, whatever friend had at Carrera. So we're going to do a Carrera. Makes no sense anymore.
No, I think that part is done.
No.
Like I said, I'm very curious what TAG does, because I'm just looking down at this watch. I don't think I'd want it in 40. I know people do, but I think that it would translate well to, it's 35, and I think it would work well in 37, 38, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll do a 35 and a 40. Who knows? Because they made an even smaller one aimed at women, which my sister had. I think I still have that in the US, by the way. And that's really, really small. So that's probably around 30 or even smaller. So who knows what they'll do, but I think they'll do something on this. And I will tell you, there were several years ago, I asked RJ when we were looking at collab stuff. I said, hey, why don't we approach Tag Heuer and see if they'd be willing to do, even using a modern F1 based on this theme from 1987 or 86, 87. And at the time, they didn't seem to be interested in going back to that era. So something's clicked with them, you know, different management, who knows, right?
Yeah.
And not to say that we would have been the people they would have chosen to work with, but I think for a long time, there are people out there who've wanted to see a return of this design in some form or another. It was a truly, truly pivotal watch, no matter if you want to believe that or not. And I get it. Some people were not affected by it, but it was a big, big deal. And I wore this watch for, man, I got it in middle school. And it came on the horrible plastic bracelet that, or strap that you had to cut. And I got the bracelet a year later and it made all the difference in the world. And I wore this watch for probably the better part of 10 years, mm-hmm. 8, 9 years. So,
you know, as a side note, and then you can move on to the Handgelenk controller. What I was a bit surprised and a bit, I think it's a bit underwhelming is the packaging.
Because I agree with you.
Because I expected a cooler. I don't know what I expected, but I think the original wasn't it like a round kind of. You had to like unscrew it or something.
Yeah, it was like a bayonet style round. Oh, so good. Yeah.
So I expected something else, and then you look at the packaging. It's just like a regular, Dagula old, nothing fancy, Heuer box. Of course, it says Keith Heuer and just us and blah blah blah. But it's just.
Yeah, it's cool. Nothing. It's not as unique as the original. I agree with you.
And that it doesn't have to be expensive, right? You don't need a display box like with the Speedmaster and whatever. I think it's also stupid to put too much effort into a box because, well, you know, let's be honest, most of us have more than one watch, so we keep them together anyways, not in their boxes. But
that was a trademark piece of the package, honestly.
Yeah.
Signature piece.
Right. And this one is like, meh.
And the other complaint I had was the model that I own, the fact that it didn't go with an all lume dial. I don't understand that choice. So it's eggshell colored, but it's not a lume dial. Which was a big differentiator on this model. And if you go look at vintage ones, a lot of them are rotten. Mine somehow stayed clean, but, And it still lights up. So,
I mean, I'd love to see one. You know, I hope I'll be able to check one out in the metal or in the resin anytime soon. But yeah, I think we pretty much said everything we wanted to say about this piece.
Yeah, I think so. And why don't we before going, we'll end on the Handgelenk today. But why don't you talk a little bit about the you covered the Amida, which we talked about last time. That watch also got a lot of interesting comments. I think some people took it for what it is, which is a very unique design from the 70s. And of course, being made in a much classier or more expensive form today. But so if you have the coin, it's a fun thing to do. But I think it's very much aimed at, it's not necessarily aimed to go compete with a Submariner or a run of the mill Seamaster, right?
Yeah. No, I think it's an interesting comparison because without having a theme, our theme for today is misunderstood watches or misunderstood releases, I guess. Or it seems because it was the same or very similar thoughts that I had when I was reading the Amida comments on Instagram and also in the article. I think some people just didn't get it, what it was. And again, if that's your opinion, that's fine. I just thought that, and this is in general, I feel sometimes when somebody like writes a negative comment and then there's like five more of basically saying the same thing with different words, it just makes no sense to me. Like, I get it. You don't like it. There's already a comment. Just like that comment. And by liking the comment, you are agreeing with it, which is fine. But, you know, sometimes people just act weird and like, this absolutely makes no sense. Of course it doesn't make sense. But and now one could argue, like, okay, if a watch doesn't make sense, why is it 4,000 because it's 2,900. It's like 3,000 plus VAT as an intro price, and it's going to be more expensive. So by the time it gets here, it's probably 4,000. It's a very expensive watch. Okay, when you buy an Amida, vintage Amida, it's like 400, 500, 600, 700. Even if you find a donor, you know, and you swap the movement for one jewel for a 17 jewel movement, it's maybe under 1,000, and that's a vintage watch. This is a brand new watch. The difference is there. The quality is there. Now, is that a 4,000 euro watch? I also think it's a tad expensive, to be honest. But I understand what went into this. And since I have the vintage one and I had the new one, I could compare. And it's really like night and day. I mean, you know, that's why I put the weight in it. It's like almost twice the weight, steel, not chromed, et cetera, et cetera. Read the article and you guys will know what I'm talking about. But it's just, there's a lot of comments like this makes no sense. You can't read the time correctly. Yeah, you can't. But you need to understand that when this watch was made in the 70s, it was a mechanical watch that they developed to fight against the quartz crisis. So they wanted to create something different. They had cascade watches, which wasn't the only one. Bulova had a cascade watch, and so did Gerard Perregaux, but those were LED watches. This is the only mechanical. So it was a mechanical watch with a very dingy, cheap mechanical movement that wanted to look like a quartz watch or like a LED watch or a quartz watch. So that's the basis of the project. And now they created something much better than that, much sturdier, much more quality, great movement. But it has to look the same, otherwise it's not an Amida Digitrend. So, is it easy to read the time? No, it's not. Even when I was wearing it, you know, I had to like turn my wrist, like okay. But when you buy this watch, that's why you buy it. Just like when you buy, a Wandering Hour watch, it's not easy to read. You need on a G-Shock. You look at it, 12:35. It's 12:35. It's like that. When you read a Wandering Hour, when you read this, it may take a while.
A single-handed watch.
Yeah. It's like driving a 90s car where there's like no electronics in there, right? It's not as fun because there's no power steering. There's no, you know, ABS, a bunch of stuff. But that's the fun of it.
It's more fun, buddy.
So if you want to drive, 10 hours, get in a new car, adaptive cruise control, you know, blah, 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 360 sensoring, whatever, cameras. If you want a fun car, get a 90s, whatever. That's the fun. It's exactly the same thing for this watch. And I guess in a way for the Keith Hoyer as well, 80s, 90s, 70s, makes no difference. So yeah, I was a bit, it was funny reading those comments because a lot of people just hated on it. But I guess they don't understand, or maybe haven't even read the article, because in the article I already mentioned that this is, and the pictures are there. It's a re-edition. It's a vintage watch. Came in the 70s. Blah, 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 blah. This makes no sense. It's stupid. Cannot wear it. Too expensive. Sure. Like the comment, move on. Not everything is made for everybody. I mean, I think we've been very vocal about stuff we like and stuff we don't like. It's okay. Just don't put the same comment there for the 27th time because it makes no sense and it just makes you look whatever. Fill in the blanks.
I hear you.
So, Handgelenks.
Yeah, you go first because I already mentioned what I have and I'll talk about it a little bit.
Kind of tease it, yeah. So, this is a watch that is not mine. not yet. A friend of mine messaged me and he said he has something at home and he wanted to show it to me. And he brought it to me by last week. A kind of beaten up green box came out of the bag and it says Rolex Oyster on the box, a paper box.
Always a nice start.
Always a nice start, yeah. And you open the lid and then there's the old green, what is this? The 10001 box, Rolex box. Mm-hmm. The wooden fake leather, I guess. It's the sound. And when you open it, inside was a nice Datejust with this silver, kind of mirrory silver dial and engine turned bezel. Case seemed to be in good condition. The watch was not running. If you wound it, it ran for a few seconds and then stopped. So we have to take it to a watchmaker. Beautifully aged loom. And I must admit, I wanted to open it and the bowl just, you know, the case back wouldn't budge. The ball was not good enough, so I need to take it to a watchmaker. And then I made the rookiest mistake I've ever made, that I forgot that I can take the case back, the bracelet off and check the reference number. And before we started recording, you reminded me of this mistake that even a five-year-old knows, but I don't. And so I did now, and it is a 16030, as you suggested it. Goes to show how much I know about Datejust versus how much you know about them. And it's just a lovely piece. As I said, it's running kind of on and off, more off than on. But and I've had Datejust in the past and whatever. Every time I wear a Datejust, I realize they're too small. But then I also realize they're not small at all, and they just look great. Feels great on the wrist. The bracelet, as you said, it's your favorite vintage bracelet. The 62510H Jubilee, of course. So, that's what I'm kind of wearing, seeing if it can be serviced, making a decision whether I want to buy it or not, if he wants to sell it or not. But it seems to be in good condition. And it's with me, I guess, for a few more weeks, and then other side.
Yeah, the picture you showed me looks really good, and it's got a bit of a darker silver dial, so not as common as the typical silver you see on a Datejust, which I think makes it stand out nicely. I like the engine turn bezel. I think it's a neat look that obviously they don't make anymore. I own a 16030 with a kind of a rare black dial, and I like this model because these five digit transitionals, no matter the model, were pretty unique. So you've got like the 16750, of course, on the GMT side. You had the 16800 for the Submariner, and these watches in their early renditions at least combine a sapphire or an acrylic crystal with a quickset movement, and I believe higher frequency. So on paper, at least, it's a better spec. Now it comes down to what you like better. So on the Datejust, of course, it would be this versus a four-digit reference with a Piepan. Mm-hmm. And I still think that these five-digit transitionals are undervalued or and underloved.
Sleepers?
Yeah, a little bit. But you get the nice lightness of a pre-sapphire model, obviously a really nice K-shape, and we're the same here. Not going to wear that watch every single day, so the quick set date is a handy thing. And yeah, that bracelet, that's a watch that, well, more and more I find myself traveling with a Datejust, and it truly goes with everything. It really does. It's whether it's with your Kith t-shirt you gotta get dressed up and tuck a shirt in and put a blazer on, Balazs.
Slacks in a blazer, yeah.
Slacks in a blazer and your tasseled loafers. Yeah, oh, God. you can shake it up at the country club with that. With that Datejust. Now, yeah. I think it's a great watch. And the other thing is, if you don't end up loving it or wearing it a ton after some point, it's like currency. You can just get rid of it.
So. Easy to move on. Yeah. No, it is. It is. It is a great watch. And as I said, I'm always surprised how the size just works. You pick it up and like, that's why I don't have a Datejust, because it's too small. And then you put it on and like, I should have one, because it's actually not small at all.
That's why everybody has a 36 millimeter Rolex.
Yep. Right? There you go.
Yeah.
So talk to me about your Hoyer F1.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, I pulled the F1 out. I guess I pulled it out last week when I got back from Vegas. Or did I do it before? I don't remember. But no, I pulled it out last week when I got back. And Like I said, I changed the battery a couple years ago, still running, a very easy battery change I did at home, screw in case back. But this watch, yeah, I got during middle school from my aunt and uncle. They used to go down to St. Thomas quite a bit for fishing-related tournaments. My uncle was in the boating business. And, of course, St. Thomas, like most of those islands down there, have a wealth of watch shops in the and they're duty free. And Tag Heuer, I still can recall as a kid being on a cruise, they were everywhere, and they were even less expensive than they were in the United States. So my aunt got me one of these. She was the kind of an aunt who would always come up with a cool present, and I still remember opening up that hockey puck like. Mm-hmm. package. I own it still. I own all the stuff. And the bracelet you had to cut to make it fit because it was incredibly long, which even then I was uncomfortable doing, but I was like, well, your wrist isn't going to get much bigger, right? So I cut it and it was still very, very stiff. It was not all that different from a, you know, an older Seiko dive strap that some people boil them and put them in a tuna can, like an actual tuna can, and boil it to give the strap a set. But yeah, this thing was terribly stiff and I didn't wear the watch much. So I knew that they made a bracelet and I asked my aunt for a bracelet next year, which even then was probably, I don't know, 100, 125 bucks, which was kind of a lot. So I got the bracelet. My dad helped me size it and off and running. And I wore the heck out of this watch and I never had a problem with it. I have a little scratch around 11 o'clock on the mineral crystal, but that and a little bit of wear to the bezel, although not that much. And it looks good, save for one time Balazs, I was traveling and I was clearly wearing another watch, but I threw it in my backpack. And this watch, unlike the new ones, doesn't have a push button clasp, but has a typical
like a click,
a click, and then it's got a fold over safety catch, like a dive bracelet. And most people don't know that this watch, despite it being the F1, has a wetsuit extension. So kind of a weird multi thing. I guess it was for if you flipped your car into the bay at Monaco, you know, you could put it over your racing suit and swim off. But
would ever happen.
Yeah. So the safety catch when it was in my backpack clearly came undone. And I remember pulling it out and the catch was all bent and everything. So I bent it back, but it's got a little kind of a wave in it almost. It still works and everything, but it's one thing that I wasn't able to really fix. And I probably could go at it, but it reminds me of a time and place when I made an error of just chucking it in my bag. It was felt like an indestructible watch, but it wasn't that day. So, other things to note versus the current Kith version, the crown actually is signed Heuer, just Heuer, inside the typical shield.
Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, this was apparently the first watch that they made that was ever signed Tag Heuer on the dial. So this was like the first thing they came out with under the, when Tag bought them. Yeah. And the story goes that this watch basically saved their asses. So it was such a huge hit. The PR material I got said that they sold over 3 million of these watches, different versions.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, Tag, I'm no Tag Heuer historian, but I think it's pretty well known fact that Tag was a company connected to Formula One, right? Cause it was, I think it was established by Ron Dennis. And then he sold it to probably a Saudi company, if I'm not mistaken, and Technique d'Avant-Garde. And then that they bought Heuer, and then that's how it became Tag Heuer. So I think even back then, the collaboration made absolute sense, right? To create a watch called the F1. specifically after the acquisition of Hoyer, or combining TAG and Hoyer. So, which I think in this collaboration wasn't really mentioned. Of course, as you said, it was all over the Miami Grand Prix, but I mean, you could argue that it is, because of course, Verstappen is wearing a TAG, and you know, TAG is sponsoring Formula One teams and blah, blah, blah. But the connection goes a bit deeper than that.
Yeah. Very heavily involved with McLaren.
Yeah.
And if I remember right, when I was at the Porsche Museum, I think there was a TAG Porsche Formula One engine there.
In Stuttgart?
Yeah.
Well, could be, yeah. They change those things quite often, but it could be, yeah. Could be.
Yeah. So, yeah, the 1984 McLaren MP42 Porsche TAG F1 engine, which, if you go look that up, this was a turbocharged engine and pretty awesome looking, but it's weird to see the TAG name on an engine block instead of a watch. So, yeah, this engine, by the way, sold for £32,500 in 2022, which is interesting.
By the way, I was wrong. In the meantime, I was Googling. It was not now founded by Ron Dennis, but obviously he was involved. Yeah. He was involved with the motorsport side. It was actually founded by Akram Ojeh, who was a naturalized Saudi businessman of Syrian origin in 1977. And TAG is involved in aviation, motorsports, and hospitality since 1977, headquarters in Luxembourg. Yeah.
Niki Lauda, Alain Prost, Kiki Rosberg. Some of these are some of the names.
Father, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty cool. So, yeah, it's...
Those are the days.
Yeah, and these watches have... like a lot of things from that period, have come up in popularity. And I think TAG Heuer from this era has started to wake up a bit as people of my age, slightly younger, are rediscovering their glory days.
But heritage.
Yeah. And, but again, still available at relatively decent prices. A lot of the colored pieces are available in Japan if you go online and look. And again, anywhere from $200 to $600, euros, whatever currency, you can find a decent example. It's a fun watch, but they do wear small. So,
yeah.
So that's it, buddy.
That was a... nice long episode with a ending with a Handgelenks instead of starting it.
Yeah. Trying to think if there's anything else to mention. Oh, I will tell you, Balazs.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the strange rules in Germany about importing things and paying duties and waiting for weeks on end to get a notice that you owe duty, it's amazingly smooth here. There's a lot of complaining, of course, post-Brexit about, well, the fact that we have duty stinks. But, of course, you read about, oh, things are going to get held up at the port forever and on and on and on. Not really the case. I had one slow issue, and I called the Royal Mail, and wouldn't you know, things got shaken loose the next day. But I've been fascinated here how quick things go and how good the tracking is of things. I've got something on the way from Canada that has taken a wild journey. It went from Canada to Switzerland and is now coming over here and has changed tracking numbers 3 times. And somehow I've been able to move through the different groups who've been handling it and have ended up at the Royal Mail, and it's supposed to be delivered today, but very smooth. So just thought I would say that to our listeners. Well done to the UK on at least making things pretty clear.
Well, yeah, De Haal is known for a lot of things, but good service is not one of them. That's all I need to say. Somebody who's dealt with DHL and/or DHL, DHL Express numerous times. But well, that's topic for another day.
That is, sir. Well, I wish you a swift recovery, sir.
And you too.
Thank you. I'm going to maybe I'll order some salbaite to you.
Mm.
That'll sort you out very quickly.
Ginger and lemon is what I heard works. Ginger and lemon.
Jack and ginger as well, by the way.
I'm sure it does too.
All right, sir. All right. Well, with that, Mike is out.
Balaji's out as well.